Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Humble Bundle changes their split. Starforged is on Kickstarter. Warner Brothers is moving away from physical media.
Okay.
And Forbidden Psalm, a Morkborg miniatures skirmish game.
Okay, cool.
Let's get started with a Humble Bundle. Let me move this a little bit.
There we go.
So it's been a long time. So Humble Bundle has been around since about 2010, and they do electronic bundles of games, audiobooks, digital, like ebooks, comics, all kinds of stuff.
And is their deal, they're also DRM free?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. They have, I think for the most part. Yeah. I'm trying to think. They do issue Steam keys. Okay. So Steam is DRM, but, they have just made a big change. So there used to be three sliders you could manipulate every time you did a pledge. One was for the studio or developer you're supporting that made the software. Right. One is Humble Bundle's share, and the other is the charity that they've chosen for that particular bundle. And now they've decided to eliminate that and just do a flat 15% cap on charity.
Okay.
So I remember in the early days, like doing that a lot. If it was a studio that I really wanted to support, I would, you know, cheat them up a little bit. So Humble Bundle always took the took the hit. They always like lost out on that split. So that may be part of why they're doing this.
Well, okay. I don't know specifics. Mm-hmm. Like I've never purchased anything from Humble Bundle. I do purchase a lot from, well, not recently because finances, is Bag of Holding. Or the Bundle of Holding, which is kind of similar, but specifically RPG stuff.
Right.
I do see the Humble Bundle. I think Humble Bundle, and maybe I'm wrong, got purchased by someone recently, maybe like IGN or something.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of the Twitter chatter on my feed is, hey, capitalism sucks. This is what getting bought by a big company does. You know, people are saying 15% to a charity isn't a charity. It's a tax deductible for the company. That's the angle I've been seeing a lot.
Yeah, and they probably are also trying to protect their share, because now they're going to have kind of a fixed share of everything that's pledged if you're not able to manipulate it. The mistake that they made is they tested this without telling anybody. So that suddenly disappeared, and people are like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? So, yeah, as you were saying, the reaction has not been positive.
No, that's not.
They did issue an apology for trialing the slider removal over the last few months, and they also said – so they did that without warning, and so that was a little – that was a little strange. And also some people said their favorite way to buy games, but they're no longer going to support it if they move ahead with this fixed this kind of the ceiling on the charitable donations.
So they apologized for trialing the no slider thing, removing the sliders.
Sorry to upset you, but we're going through with this anyhow.
Yeah.
So grin and bear it. Yeah.
Sorry for springing this on you. It's still going through.
Right. Yeah. So that's a shame. But I always felt a little bit odd that they were, you know, that you kind of, it's that impulse purchase by the cash register. It's like, oh, but I'm supporting charity. You know, I'll buy something that I might not play or buy something. Yeah. So it kind of like, you know, eases the purchase. Like, you know, oh, it's only $15 and I can make as much of that as I want, go to charity or to the developer. So that's great.
Is that necessarily a bad thing though?
It's a marketing angle.
Okay.
And we see now that it was never like a true, like an altruistic, like, you know, they wanted to connect games and media with charity. They were just kind of doing that because that was a, you know, it got you to reach in your pocket a little bit easier. And so that stuff is a little,
I wonder, like, a little tangent into the discussion of ethics and capitalism. But I think, okay, prior to this no slider 15% cap, I wonder if you could argue that while that is the case and it was encouraging an impulse buy and putting money in the company's pocket, the fact that you could do those sliders and people who would incline to do so would give more to charity.
Right.
Could you say, okay, you were kind of doing like morally you were doing good. That kind of offsets the thing. I don't know. I mean, like, you can't argue that anymore with the 15% cap.
Right.
But I mean, prior to that, maybe you could.
Yeah. And so I think this is something that this was part of the early, you know, kind of we have good intentions, we're the good guys, internet, and now we're seeing the internet as all criminals and
big corporations, and it's the same thing. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so you know, and we've seen that with other things, Kickstarter and Patreon and things are starting to show that they need to make money. They don't, they're not completely.
Well, they need to make money, but it's also kind of like, okay, you have shareholders who are being greedy,
right,
which is driving this rather than, anyway.
And employees that are unionizing.
Yeah, exactly. Which we don't, certainly don't want. That'll just cost more money. Yeah.
But speaking of Kickstarter, there is a current Kickstarter for Starforged. Starforged is the sci-fi evolution of Ironsworn, the tabletop role-playing game. And so that was the kind of fantasy setting. And so Starforged will be the sci-fi setting. And I'll put a link to that Kickstarter in the description so you can take a look at that. So the backer rewards include the digital edition. They're going to do a deluxe edition hardcover, as well as wirebound references, printed asset cards. So a lot of interesting stuff. I think there were three tiers
I looked at this. Maybe like kind of the PDF, the digital, maybe just the book, and then maybe the deluxe set, which included like the physical cards and that wirebound thing.
Nice.
I think there were three levels.
Nice. And so all backers, regardless of the level, will instantly get access to the preview edition. So that's a 230-plus page full color PDF. Yep. So you can play right away. Yep. You can try this out right away.
I think the author, Sean Tompkin, in the Discord tweeted like a screen cap or tweeted a screen cap of the Discord where someone said, there's obviously a mistake with the preview edition. This is a PDF of the full game.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, yeah. It's just kind of like a funny one where it's like, yeah, it says preview edition. It's the final game.
Right, right.
So kind of continuing. I suppose you do have to back, but continuing in the tradition of the Ironsworn PDF was just full book free.
Right, right.
Which is what kind of convinced me to look at it and then go full in on the both hardbacks. I'm probably going to back Ironsworn Starforged that exclusive, not the exclusive, but the all-in level, because I just want, I like physical stuff and I want
the gold inlay.
No, not that's a bit ridiculous, but
so are they also including access to Ironsworn, the previous hard
there
physical books?
Is
like add-ons?
Yes, there are add-ons.
Okay, good.
One of the wrinkles that they very clearly said up front is fulfillment for cards and like books for the Ironsworn stuff is being handled through DriveThruRPG. Mm-hmm. So shipping is completely separate from your pledge. And the way DriveThruRPG handles cards have to be a separate order as well.
Right,
so
right.
Just be aware of that if you wanted to do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that seems to happen quite a bit if you're using them for fulfillment. Yeah. Their card print on demand and their book print on demand are different.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But their card shipping to Japan is exorbitant, which is why I've not ordered more card stuff.
Right, right. Yeah,
books. And it's not their fault.
Right.
But
yeah, books are decent, but yeah, you're right.
I think it's because they have a printing facility in like Australia or somewhere that's closer to us in Japan where the only place they print cards is the States.
Right. That makes sense. Well, speaking of physical media.
Oh, can I do something on Kickstarter first?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah,
Kickstarter.
So I'm probably going to back that Starforged.
Yes.
I did notice that they said it's an evolution of Ironsworn and that they have noted that there's not much compatibility between Ironsworn and Ironsworn Delve and Starforged. I don't know if they mean, or I don't know if the author means mechanically, because I can't imagine it's that much different, or if they kind of just mean like setting-wise or stuff.
Right.
I haven't looked into it to find out, but they very specifically called that out. Mm-hmm. Something else I was looking at on Kickstarter is Steamforged Games, the Monster Hunter board game.
Right. Uh-oh.
I'm sorely tempted to do their $300.
Look at what happens.
What Jeremy's pointing at, it's all the boxes, and that's probably why I can't do it. But it's that fear of being left out where here's some Kickstarter-exclusive monsters.
Right.
Kickstarter-exclusive hunters, and if you back it, like $300 gets you everything, which is about 50% of the manufactural retail price. Where I'm looking at that going, God only knows what it would cost to ship to Japan.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be.
Which sucks because, hey, Capcom's here. But I also looked at it and said, when am I going to play this?
Yeah.
What am I going to wait 10 years for my kid to be 14 to play with this? Right. Although apparently you can play it as a one player, which didn't help my decision.
Yeah, right, but, right.
Anyway.
Nice. Yeah, Steamforged makes good minis, so you know things are going to look nice. I think, though, you may be right. I'm trying to think the last thing that I dealt with them, but I don't think you're going to get it from China. I think it goes to Europe and then back. So it may be like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm also shipping Starforged. To the States,
yeah,
because people have no control over shipping. Mm-hmm. Shipping to the rest of the world, which is Japan, was going to be anywhere from like $70 to $120.
Right.
Which, not the author's fault at all. I just can't swing that on a $60 pledge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's another one that's getting shipped to the States.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That's just the reality now we got to deal with. Yeah. Anyway. And who knows? Yeah. Who knows if that's going to change anytime soon?
Probably not. Oof. So, but moving on.
Yeah, but even worse news. this kind of came out. I think there was an official announcement that followed this, but Jerry Beck, an animation historian, mm-hmm. who's probably a little bit angry that he's lost a job. I think he did a lot of writing for like the inserts and the booklets that come with like the box sets for animation. So he kind of leaked, and I think it was in a Facebook group, that Warner Brothers is moving away from physical media.
Meaning that we're not going to get like DVDs and,
right.
and
stuff like that. Because Warner Brothers is owned by AT&T, who owns HBO Max. Oh. So they're leaning heavily into the streaming, which is, you know, kind of blamed for what's going on. And we've seen kind of recently, because just Modiphius sent an email like last week that said Dune is delayed. Oh, it got stuck on a boat in the Suez Canal. You know, you're not getting it as when we thought. So waiting for stuff to get from China to Europe, you know, got delayed by 5 days, which then kind of just kinda cascades into longer delay. So, you know, I think with the pandemic and all of the things that they're realizing are now bottlenecks for manufacturing, companies are saying, why are we doing this? So Warner Brothers is going to be the first to kind of pull the cord on that. So they will begin to phase out DVD and Blu-ray releases beginning 2022. Hmm. So for the rest of this year, there will be releases, but these have been in, you know, production for a long time and going to lean specifically on streaming and HBO Max as their platform. So this was leaked, and the animation historian said there are no plans to commemorate Daffy or Tweety's anniversaries next year because they are moving away from the physical media. Hmm. So it might be somebody a little disgruntled that was enjoying their writing gig for Warner Brothers.
Why wouldn't you be bitter about that?
Right.
Yeah. But also, like, again, kind of corporate talk. Mm-hmm. That is a little bit worrying because it makes archiving stuff more difficult. And not that I really care about video games, but like seeing people on social media saying like, if things are getting discontinued, or like there's precedents where like Apple can say, oh, you know, all those things in your iTunes cloud, you actually don't own those. We're going to take those back, which moving to digital, especially streaming service, mm-hmm. where they're able to just go, oh no, that thing you paid for, nah, you are actually just renting it is kind of problematic. So,
And they even mentioned so both Apple and Amazon are currently in court facing lawsuits about digital rights and, you know, what is the actual, what does that provide you? Is that a license or just access to something?
Wow. So if those go in Apple and Amazon's favor, we've all bought fucking NFTs of our stuff, meaning... Fuck all. Oh, excuse me. This wasn't a family-friendly cast, was it? No. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's really true. And it's a real shame. And so the thing, kind of bringing it back to tabletop, how would you feel about a future of tabletop when we're only PDF or PDF only, and if you want a physical book, you're printing it yourself. You're going to a print-on-demand service or you're using your inkjet printer.
For me personally, it's not that big of a deal because – I mean, we have easy access to convenience stores, which actually have great photocopiers here. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff I buy is through like itch.io anyway, and that's mostly PDFs.
Right.
And then if I do like a game, I'll go buy something like print on demand. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder. But that future, I mean, I really do get frustrated, like only having digital copies of things, especially when I like really want to go through something or doing a session. I hate scrolling on a tablet during a session.
Yeah, I still like to have the physical book in front of me to be able to flip through and stuff because it's just faster. I do like the portability of PDFs and stuff on my phone. And I know some people have optimized games
for mobile devices and tablets,
which is useful, but excuse me. I don't know. I like physical books as well. Mm-hmm. We might just have to accept the fact that physical is going to be kind of the special rather than
Yeah, and
what we're used to.
But yeah. It might also be that the big players then, so, you know, Wizards of the Coast and, you know, maybe Paizo, they're going to be producing physical books. Everyone else is like, yeah, we can't afford to do this anymore.
No, to be honest, people who are supporting those companies are going to support them no matter what.
But I'm just talking about they have an advantage in the marketplace. So even more, it's like, I really like physical copies. Okay, I guess I'm playing D&D. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I hadn't thought about that. But if lots of things kind of move to digital only, mm-hmm. while that might mean that brick and mortar stores carry only the physical things, which would end up being and are already D&D and Pathfinder, don't you think those places will get like smaller and carry less kind of anyway? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It's like you already kind of have to go other places if you want non-D&D stuff. So this is just like kind of more of the same in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really true. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And we'll see if they're going to kind of backpedal on this when nobody else does it, or if they're, because that's thing, leaning on HBO Max. So that's the weird thing that Netflix is experiencing and everything else. It's like, there is a maximum. There's a limit to how many people will be subscribing to your service. There's a limit of population. So you know that you will have, you can expect a certain percentage of each country's population to subscribe to your service, and it will kind of fluctuate within that. And the only thing you can do to make more money is increase the price of the service. You know, so it's
or like, put more content on there.
No, but then that's not necessarily. I mean, that's still going to do this because people are like, oh, I want to watch The Mandalorian. I'll subscribe to Disney Plus. Okay, Mandalorian, watched all 8 episodes, whatever, I'm off. So it's not going to help that. Like, I think they're seeing it as, oh, it's guaranteed. We're going to know how much money, you know, is coming in every quarter because of this digital subscription paradise. But it's got this weird limit. So they're going to hit that limit and they go, oh, now what do we do?
Yeah.
How do we? So everyone has to buy 2 subscriptions now too. Yeah.
Well, I think that's why they're cracking down. Or various services are cracking down on that password sharing.
Yeah, right.
Or if you're going to be like my company, whatever online service we have, it's like, we're going to make you have to jump through like a fuck ton of hoops to cancel your service and just kind of hope you don't do it. Right, you know? Right.
How about a month for free?
Yeah, exactly. Right. A month for free. And you actually got to come in person and cancel it.
That sounds like cable companies. Yeah, oh, really. Man. Wow. Well, something that I missed on crowdfunding that, and it's because there is so much supported, like, you know, licensed stuff, or I guess open license stuff. There's so much compatible stuff for Mjölkborg that I miss stuff in the flow.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, that looks okay. That looks okay. If it's not produced by the original studio, I don't look at it as closely. But is one that I should have looked at a little harder. So Forbidden Psalm is a tabletop miniatures game inspired and compatible with the Mjölkborg.
I may have seen this.
Yeah. So it's a 28, you know, miniature agnostic 28 millimeter skirmish game. And so you create a band, you recruit a war band of 5 greedy souls to undertake the biddings of the mad wizard.
Okay.
So,
yep. I think I have seen this.
Yeah. And he doesn't just hire one group. Yep. He hires multiple groups. Yep. And so you're all trying to complete his, do his bidding and across purposes with each other. It looked great. And the interesting thing that they do is everything that they're including. So they're doing new weapons, weapons tables, new spells, equipment, new flaws, feats, calamity table for when magic goes bad, and an eight session long campaign. All of this is compatible with the role-playing game.
Right.
So they did, they were thinking very much, you know, we want to make something for this world, we want to, to be a skirmish game, but it's also everything we've created will still be compatible, and you can add this in if you've created characters. You can actually play as those characters from your warband.
Or imagine you could go the other way.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep. Right. So, yeah, I thought that was a really, really nice thinking. And they offered some really great. They're now finished. They're now concluded Kickstarter. They offered some really great. So they got pressured into doing a hardcover version because it matches the original books and everything. Which is good. And it looks beautiful. What the book that they produce looks really good. But then they also did like cardboard standees if don't want to do miniatures. And then they also offered, I'm sure it was very expensive, but they offered a kind of kit-bashed set of pre-painted miniatures, like the ones they photographed for their books.
Oh, wow. If they had photographed them for the books, we have them. And I kind of see it as being like a super duper exclusive. Like, there's one of these.
You want it? Right. Yeah. So I thought that was, that was great. And it's available digitally right now on DriveThruRPG. So it may be worth us giving it a shot since we've got we've got miniatures rolling around for Frostgrave.
Oh, yeah. But I still have to buy. I've only put together like 5 of them. Right. And now my kid has arrange them on my desk and saying, they're all fighting, they're all fighting. Yeah, okay, they are. Yeah, but please be careful with them. But, yeah. No, I looked at, I didn't associate the name Forbidden Psalm with the Mjolnir compatible skirmish game, but I have seen this. Mm-hmm. Not really knowing the rules of Mjolnir, I said, that's cool. I don't really know what you would have to have done to it to make a miniatures game out of the game or what's different. And I think I was a little burnt out on Grimdark stuff. Ah, I mean, like, it can absolutely be fun and cathartic and stuff. I just kind of went, cool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'll probably look at this later, but yeah, looking at other stuff now. But I would definitely like play it. And
yeah, yeah.
And I like miniatures games that have a campaign.
Yes. Yeah. I like that a lot too. So any kind of, so it kind of builds as your warband becomes more powerful, the challenges are greater.
Kind of closer to tabletop role-playing game. I mean, like, think about Warhammer, mm-hmm. or when I was playing, which was like 3rd, 4th, and 5th edition maybe. Like, you could play with a battle, and you just had to come up with your own narrative. Okay, why are we fighting? I don't know. But like, you know, tabletop miniature campaign mm-hmm. does that for you and kind of gives you a bit mm-hmm. more narrative and makes things a bit more fun. Or kind of like Necromunda, you know, like, or Mordheim. Like, watching your warband kind of change and mm-hmm, grow mm-hmm. and oh, so-and-so has a niggling injury, which means, you know, oh, that's a Blood Bowl campaign. You know, they'll be out for the next game. Stuff like that mm-hmm. makes miniature war games more fun.
Oh, yeah, for me. Yeah, I think so. No, I think that's nice. And the fact that this is another kind of, you know, miniatures agnostic. Yeah. So you can...
We could even use it for upgrade stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We can, like, yeah, just directly go right
suddenly
in
that North Star Miniatures... extra box at no shipping of cultists is going to come in a lot handier. Right.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so as I said, this is a compatible product for Mjolnir, and the developer is, or producer is Kevin Rahman. So I'll put a link to the DriveThruRPG digital link.
Cool.
The only thing, when I watched a flip through of the book, I think it was like somebody that got their Kickstarter hardback early. There's a little cheesiness, like some of the references, there's a lot of pop culture references and some of the things, and that kind of takes me out of it
a little
bit. If you're gonna, you should reference like black metal and like, you know, pretty hardcore stuff, not too much ephemera of popular culture.
Well, now I think they have like a reference to like the Spice Girls or something.
it's not quite that bad, right. but yeah, that was the only thing that kind of like it looks really good. I mean, the book itself is designed really well, and it seems like the system, it's simple, it's kind of, you know, more rules light, right. like the role-playing game. And it seems
rulings,
like it would be fun.
Not rules.
Yeah. right. So it should be fun. So yeah.
Cool.
Link to that.
So when we ever get to game together when this pandemic ends.
Right. Right. Yeah. We're in the third lockdown in case anyone's keeping track at home.
Yeah. Which will also do nothing like the other ones.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So something I brought up last week that I kind of stopped myself and said, I'm going to wait until Chris is here because I want to talk about this. So the 5e release of Ciborum, is happening. And I was actually corrected. Because I just associated to Free League,
right.
Coriolis, Ciborum is like Mutant Year Zero, right? But no, it's not. It's not a
something
D6 dipole. Yeah, it's kind of like one of the commenters said RuneQuest. So it's like roll under, D20 roll under kind of mechanics. And so I was expressing this as kind of a sad thing to see because we already talked about Trophy being, I really like Ciborum, but I want to play that system. So this is my take on, you know, I'm inspired by that setting. So the setting is kind of inspiring people, and now we're going to see it in 5e. Mm. And the title, I think the title that they chose made it even a little sadder because I think it's the ruins of Ciborum 5. You're like,
I didn't put that together, but then it's pretty funny.
So it's over. I think it's always been in ruin, but just specifically naming the 5e version that. So I was kind of negative and wanted to wait until you were here to talk about
people
this.
Want more negativity.
But the one thing that I wanted to talk about, and this is a little bit more of the Strangelove 5e talk, is the silver lining, or the thing we have to realize, like the moment in history that we're part of that we need to realize, is this is never going to happen again. Like, there will never be
a 6th edition, probably. Sorry.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is if they screw up the 6th edition, this is over. like, you know, we're living in a time where there is almost a default setting. And even a lot of independent producers are saying, yeah, we want players to play this. We want players to see what we've written, the world we've created. Let's make it work in 5e. So the most people at the most popular time for tabletop role playing are all playing this game. So this is like crossover. This is like ABBA type crossover or Nirvana. You know, this is like they've actually like gone between groups of people that would have never been doing the same thing at the same time. And, you know, they're all participating in this same hobby. So as much as it's frustrating that it's such the 800-pound gorilla at the time, it's like we're never going to see this again, because if Wizards of the Coast fails with 6th edition and people kind of like fourth, they just kind of back away and say, I don't like this game anymore, it's going to be 10%, 10%, 10% of what everyone is playing. So there won't be this universal like, oh, you play, you know, 5e, right? So we can do that. I have a group. We have, you know, it's never going to exist again.
It's like, I couldn't tell you what episode, but back when they announced 5th edition, we had a similar discussion. We had a similar discussion on Edward Hands. And I remember saying, it was kind of the same where we all said, if WotC messes up 5th edition, there's not going to be an industry leader because the market is just going to fracture. Like nothing else is dominant enough to be kind of to rise to the top. And I kind of still think that's true. I think the difference between then and now is people, a larger percentage, though still not enough, of people are aware of a wider variety of games. So if 5th edition collapses or if 6th edition is a failure, more people will know that they can go other places than when 5th edition came out.
That's a good point.
I mean, probably not enough, right? But more. And like I always say, like from a business standpoint, absolutely cannot blame Free League for doing this. I mean, all it does, like when we talked about a Savage World. No, it wasn't a Savage World edition of. No, it was a Savage World edition of Pathfinder.
Oh, yes. Right? Savage Pathfinder.
Yeah. Savage Pathfinder. Yeah. I mean, why not? People like this game. You have this other game. All you're doing is ensuring that more people are going to play your game. And maybe some of them are going to come over to the Simborum system. Maybe, probably not. People are going to stay in 5th edition. From a company standpoint, it's more people buying your books and supporting your company. So,
yeah.
Even though I say the same thing, I'm kind of like, it's kind of sad, you know?
Yeah.
Why not?
Right. And for that material to like, you know, live on in case that system, because another Swedish company, Riot Minds, their Trudvang, which is that Trudvang is kind of like the I think the second or third official setting of Demons and Dragons, the kind of Swedish Dungeons and Dragons. They just did that as well. They converted everything to 5e. And so now, though, when they're releasing new, because everything exists in Swedish, and now they're translating things over and converting for the English-speaking market, now they're releasing two. This is the, you know, the original, and now they have the 5e version of everything. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that made it a little difficult when I was going to back the latest Elves expansion. I was like, both is a lot of books. Yeah. So that kind of thing happening is, so we'll see. But yeah, it's a weird time. And the hopeful thing, though, is even if 6th edition or 5e like loses its popularity, now people are participating in tabletop in so many different ways. There's, the actual plays, live streaming, podcasts, and just, you know, now the virtual tabletops have really changed, you know, removed distances and allowed people to participate in things that didn't even exist before, wasn't even a thought. You had to really kind of screw around with Google Hangouts or whatever to make it, you know, a possibility. Yeah. And now there's dice rollers and beautiful, you know, maps and grids and stuff you can use. So it is going to change, but the fracture may still occur. But
I think the fracture will still occur if 6th edition is a failure. Just more people are aware that they could go other places. Mm-hmm. I wonder what would be the industry leader. Maybe Pathfinder, only because it's the next largest one.
Right. Yeah, and somebody would have to kind of It would be one of those unpredictable things, just like, you know, the popularity of Fortnite or some of these things where it's like you see this in gaming where it's like, why is this so popular? Yeah. It's just like it just struck something that people, and as soon as like enough influential people adopt something, then here comes here comes the horde. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So on the table.
Ooh, yeah.
So I just received Shattered City. So nice. Shattered City. So we've talked about Mystia a few times. So this is the Mystia setting RPG.
Cool.
And it was done by the same designer of Legacy, Life Among the Ruins.
Sweet.
So flipping through it, the only thing I'm concerned about is if this is just a reskin of Legacy Life Among the Ruins. So I don't want that to be true, because I think the setting is pretty rich. I like what they did.
Oh, you mean mechanical?
Yeah, mechanically it may just be, but it is powered by the apocalypse. Okay. You know,
so it'll be
but maybe D10. I'm getting confused. Ooh. I've been reading too many rules.
Yeah.
It may be a D10, but it's still that same system.
You're still looking at like the three success
and taking stress instead of like there's no hit points and things.
Oh, cool.
But the reason that I'm worried is I have to go back. I have a digital copy of Legacy and I want to read what that is about, because I think that's about creating a civilization, like rebuilding a civilization after an apocalypse. And that's what this is about, is building a city on the borderlands of what's developed. So you're trying to escape the kind of rule and domination of like opposing kingdoms. And so you pick a faction and kind of support it. The support materials for this are really beautiful. And so I can't wait to do those on a show those off on a live stream and also do like a flip through of the book. But I really, the Travis Anderson art is beautiful. It's all throughout this. And I think they did a pretty good job of like pairing, you know, classes and use the guilds and stuff to give you flavor. So I'm hoping that, but they did have some technical problems or some pandemic related problems. The developer was actually a frontline worker and so announced, I'm helping people. So this is going to be off, you know, this is going to be sidelined for a little while, but they you know, produced it. It a little bit of a name change. I think originally it was Mystia Borderlands.
Oh yeah, so we could never pronounce. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The lisping one. So Shattered City is the new name for it. And I think it may fit what they're trying to do with the mechanics as well.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. So this will be a live stream soon. I want to read through this and then I'll do like a flip through and show you the amazing the game.
And then we'll play it.
And yes, and hopefully no, because I don't think it would be, especially because it's not going to be a lot of prep. You know, like Powered by the Apocalypse. There's so much done. And the player aids are beautiful. There's heavy coated kind of erasable sheets. Yeah. So we can just kind of, and they give you a plastic case that you can just kind of, so because you're writing on it probably with erasable, you want to put everything kind of safely back and keep it protected.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really, really surprised. The quality of the game the support accessories was really good. And so that made me happy, because I was worried that this was going to either just kind of disappear, or maybe we'll just release this digitally because pandemic. But yeah, it's a nice looking book and we'll go through it soon.
Cool.
So was this episode sponsored by anything Brighthammer related?
Sponsored? I don't know. Am I supposed to like pass you money under the table for that?
No, we're kind of passing you promotion. I think it's a reverse sponsorship.
Cool. Reverse sponsorship. So I don't know. Finally, speaking of pandemic and all that stuff, finally finished the, I'm almost going to be able to see it. There it is. The Little Bestiary.
Oh, nice.
So the three booklet set is complete. And it's still pay what you want because I want people to have access to it. And I haven't talked about it a lot, but I've gotten like three of the four submissions for the adventure modules that I hired freelance writers to write.
Right.
Stuff's been kind of busy, so I haven't had a chance to like read or edit them. But sometime in the summer, there's going to be that four, possibly like five little adventure booklets released.
Nice.
People online have already started making it. I know at least two people have written Brighthammer compatible adventures, which is kind of the thing that's missing. Like, here's all the tools.
Yes.
I've said before how I like sample adventures, then kind of show everybody, here's what you're expected to do, here's the tone of the game, here's kind of what the characters would do. I haven't had a chance to make one of those yet, so I'm kind of glad people have.
Right.
But there will be some coming, hopefully, in the summer. And not written by me, because I wanted other people to write them.
Oh, that's very cool. Are you happy?
That's kind of boring.
Are you happy with kind of, did they kind of get what you were putting down?
I didn't. I actually didn't really have anything apart from your heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have heroes do stuff for coin, and basically no toxic stuff in there. But apart from that, people had free reign about what they thought.
And the fantasy is high.
Yes, the fantasy is high.
Yeah. And the hammers are bright. Excellent. Cool. Yeah, so we'll put a link to your itch.io. Is there anything else, any other way to – so that's probably the best
currently
place.
No.
Okay.
I'm thinking about putting it on DriveThruRPG, but that thing's such a nightmare to navigate.
Have you looked at Lulu too? You can
do, I haven't.
Yeah, you should. They're print on demand, and you can do
– I do have plans for slightly advanced versions or extra expanded material for each of these three booklets. I've scaled these up from A7 to A6, and they look really sparse. And A6 is generally the smallest booklet size you can print for those on-demand things.
Right, right.
So I wanted to have at least 16 pages per booklet rather than 8 before I thought about an actual print-on-demand option. So I have thought about it. I have to generate about like 100% more material before I do that. I have that in the works, but...
It is Golden Week.
And there ain't no daycare, which means I ain't doing except watching my kid.
Right.
Yeah. Which is why it took 2 months for that bestiary to come out,
right,
despite being written as notes in my book. Yeah. Anyway.
Nice. Well, good. Well, where can people find you?
On Twitter and on itch.io. Both places are HiveMind, HYVEMYND, because back when I made my little AIM screen name, mm-hmm, spelling with I's was taken. Which is exactly why it's spelled with Y's.
Nice.
So how about you?
So I'm doing a live stream, a weekly live stream of my single panel gag cartoon. So that's Abuse Cartoons on Twitch and YouTube, and abusecartoons.com is the website. And I'm still getting everything converted over for for the
Upturn table.
Yeah, so Upturn table is the new branding, and there is a Redbubble store as we speak. Yeah, so I since I worked on the graphics so long, I wanted to kind of show some of that off. So yeah, so I'll put a link to the Redbubble store so you can take a look at our turned up tables and
next episode I'm gonna be sporting an upturned table shirt.
Nice. Yeah so that's all available. And so if you'd like to support what we're doing, please visit patreon.com/upturntable.
We're not weaklings anymore.
No, we're still weaklings.
Oh, we're still weaklings.
Yeah, we are. So I couldn't give that name up. Yeah, that wasn't going to exist as Idle Red Hands. So the weaklings have followed us over. Hopefully they're following us over. So we support all weaklings. There's several patron levels supporting the lore videos, just general support for the podcast, and also specifically the weekly.
Cool.
And so that is all for this week. So please, if you like this video, please give us a like and share it. And if you want to get notifications of when we go live and record, please subscribe to either the Twitch or YouTube. And that is all for this week. So we'll do this again next week and see you then.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.